Charm of Favor, Chapter 27.
No one knows your name when you are selected to be one of the pilots of Air Force One. Boeing's 747-200 was old by any standard, but airframes don't really wear out. The pair of VC-25A jets was delivered in 1983. They were the fastest commercial jets in the air, with a top speed of 619 miles an hour. And these units were constantly upgraded with the latest defense systems to protect the leader of the free world. It was a pleasure to fly because it was vastly overpowered and rarely transported more than 100 people, although it was capable of flying more than 150,000 pounds in payload, more than 5,300 nautical miles at altitudes up to 45,000 feet. This was a special mission. It must have been, for Colonel Blaine Jameson had been retired from the Big Iron for 10 years when he got the call. He and his wife of 38 years, Linda, were picked up by a plain white car and driven to the Pentagon. He had never entered the building from the side entrance, and it was the first time since he retired that either he or his wife had left with the house without their cell phones. The 4-hour drive was peaceful and uneventful. Even though Linda had a tendency to get car sick riding in the back, she rode comfortably as the driver was smooth, quiet, and highly trained in the way he moved through traffic, without making a single mistake. The small auditorium was nearly full of couples like him and Linda. One couple came from as far away as Florida. The invitation did not require an RSVP. It was more like an appointment card. Simple in its design, with the small zigzag signature of the president. One by one, he had felt the cards in his own hands. Some he carefully set aside, a feeling. Others he rubbed along the edges, reverently laying them on the desk in his bedroom alone, where he slowly signed them. 24 pilots, with 24 wives, selected from hundreds for a special mission. They filed into the small auditorium and lowered the theater seat bottoms as Blaine sat down next to Linda. He took her hand. The lights dimmed slightly as a spotlight turned onto the podium to the right of the stage of the old pilot's briefing room. His heart skipped a beat as he remembered sitting in a room like this 26 years ago, receiving the mission briefing for the bombing routes over Iraq during the Gulf War, with 100 other National Guard and commercial pilots called out of reserve to fly. Linda returned the squeeze from his freckled hand surrounding hers. "Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States," came the man's voice with unusual calm from the podium. Every person stood, and most of the men brought their right hands to the best salute they could muster, while the rest stood holding onto their wives' hands. The young man stepped back from the podium and took a large step to the right as the president walked up behind the mic and adjusted it to his height. He was wearing a dark suit with a shining white shirt and a red tie. "Please be seated," said the president, clearing his throat quietly. "Today it is I who will stand for the great service you have given to our country. I especially want to thank your wives, who kept your homes together and supported you while you served. Tonight, I have a special request of you, and to be quite honest, I could not ask anyone to make this request for me. It is not a small thing that I ask. The world outside this room does not know what I am about to share with you. Ladies and gentlemen, we are at war. I think you all thought you knew that already, but this is different. We have reason to believe that in the next few hours the United States will be attacked by a nuclear weapon that is already inside our country. Without going into all the details of how it got here, I want to instead focus on why it is here, and what those who placed it here want to accomplish. First, let me say that they have been working very hard to destroy America for a long time. They worked as one for decades to take away our rights. They have been somewhat successful. I used to think it was because our leaders and elected officials were stupid. But now, I must admit, I may have been mistaken about that. I began to see this back in the late 80s, and when they narrowly lost control of the government in the 2000 election, they put their backup plan into action, and a few months later attacked the World Trade Center not far from my home. I don't mind telling you, that hurt. It hurt me, and it hurt America. It hurt Big League. It was a terrible thing. I've been saying this for what I think is a long time, but I resolved then and there that I would run for president one day and do my best to make America great again. In my business, 15 years goes by in 15 minutes, but the constitutional rights we lost in that short amount of time were staggering. I gave up a life of unmatched success because this country made that life possible for me and literally for every American who works hard and applies themselves to their dreams. I could not, by any stretch of the imagination, let this country be destroyed when I knew I could provide the leadership to save it. But our enemies are very old and very powerful. They only have one thing standing in their way of taking over this world once and for all. That one thing is America, said the president. He paused for a moment and took a drink from the bottled water placed on the podium. He swallowed dryly and looked around the room. I need 12 pilots. Air Force One will be flying a special mission, and I'm asking for volunteers. We don't have time to do this again, so I selected 24 of you. Your wives are here because this mission may be your last. I don't know how to put it any other way. Of course, your wives can come with you if you like. It's your choice. Someone once told me that many are called, but few there are that choose. We leave in 30 minutes. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You are each the greatest Americans I have ever met. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America, said the president, as he saluted one more time. He held his hand as perfectly as he could above his right eyebrow as the pilots and their wives stood, all of them. I trust you're safely away, Mr. President, said Raymond into the smooth platinum receiver against his ear. The cabinet is with you. Except those two, yes, sir. If you conserve fuel, you can remain airborne for 33 hours? Yes, sir, it will seem like forever. Let me assure you, their forces have been in place for months, and they will attempt to seize Washington within minutes of the blast. Their eyes are everywhere, Mr. President, except on that aircraft. There are fighters and missile interceptors in Greenland, sir. There is a refueling facility under what we call Operation Bear Claw. Since early in the campaign, we knew you would, but Hillary's team was confident their voter base was enough to hand her the keys. No, sir. They cannot read minds. Unless it is spoken aloud. Yes, sir. When you speak, they listen. That's how the leaks happened, said Raymond smoothly. He listened as President Trump shared his ideas with him. Air Force One was one of the few safe places on the planet where command and control could be maintained, but without a way to speak to the people, there would soon be chaos. The utmost secrecy was demanded for more than 2 years to slowly and meticulously move Marines to Greenland. Tankers, fighter aircraft, radio repeater aircraft and buoys, anti-missile batteries, and secure living facilities took 2 months to secretly transport and erect and configure into a remote command post. It was all done under the National Science Foundation Polar Research Division. The Russians never suspected a thing. I understand, Mr. President. Just in case. It has been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you, sir. Godspeed, said Raymond, softly pressing the button on the screen of his phone. Adnan found America to be a different world than he expected. His entire youth, he was told of the filth and decadence of America. His father told him the entire country was full of gluttons who wore the skulls of their unborn children on their belts. The great Satan consumed the world and blasphemed with every breath, while the true founders of the civilized world were trampled under its iron shoe. His faith was not shaken by the harmless, peaceful infidels he saw every day, who worked hard in the belief that they were free. He imagined that Damascus was once green and beautiful, like America, with rivers full of fish and nutrients for the rich farmlands. America would never know what thousands of years felt like, let alone to be the backdrop for all holy books. His city was conquered only a few times over many millennia, but it took the ceaseless bombardment of American weapons to break its spirit, crumbling every building, sending millions of his people screaming into Europe for shelter. Its leaders had carved up the Middle East according to their own delight, and decimated the caliphate that ruled the world for nearly 1,000 years. He had no regrets. The sun was peeking over the horizon below the hilltops to his right, as the one lane of traffic became two, and then began to slow. He looked at his watch. By now, the sub-zero tritium was thawing, building pressure in the 12 chambers inside the 2-inch-thick enrichment controller. It didn't matter. The piezoelectric pumps were built to withstand 20,000 pounds per square inch. The 12 bolts that fastened the controller were 14-millimeter stainless steel. The latest design was superior to the September 2017 device the North Koreans had detonated deep inside their mountain facility. Still, Adnan was a man known for his reliability and attention to detail. He always delivered. In less than 3 hours, he would be reported missing from work for the first time. Just because he was exceptionally productive at programming in C++, he knew he had to be on some sort of watch list. By now, they would have tried at least once to check the validity of his credentials. Oh, they acted like they didn't care, because nearly every programmer with his skill had a checkered past. Hacking is second nature to a master programmer. There were parolees in that very facility, but their work was audited to minimize the risk. The contractors were paid by NASA, DARPA, and even more secret agencies no one knew about according to a prevailing wage, and they pocketed the difference. Most of these contracts were on a no-bid basis with sole source status that ensured they would make at least 100% profits. He rolled his fists around the rim of the steering wheel in frustration as traffic came to a crawl. Still more than 100 miles to the city of Nashville. He ran the calculations again in his head. The device would not be effective from here. No more than 3 miles from the old Hickory Dam north of Nashville was the plan. 22,500 acres of water that formed most of the lakes north of the city would become an inland tsunami ripping 100 square miles off the face of the earth, while crippling 3 major highway systems and bridges. Besides, the power station that would be physically destroyed in the blast, the electromagnetic pulse would overload every microcircuit for 500 miles in every direction. But he had to be nearly on top of it for the blast to be effective. The general contractor resurfacing West Main Street in Hendersonville was behind schedule and was expecting the delivery of the IED Adnan expertly disguised as a reserve compressor. At this rate, it would be nearly noon when he pulled off of Tennessee Highway 31E and onto West Main. The communications module in the battery cabinet would receive the arming code and initiate its countdown with a pulse from the Kwangyongsong 4 Earth observation satellite launched by North Korea on the 7th of February 2016. It had orbited in complete silence ever since. 9 days later, Donald Trump officially announced he was running for President of the United States. The story behind the development of that satellite was one of the deepest secrets in the world. Adnan should know he was a human component of that plan. The DNC was not convinced Trump would actually run for office. Media was filled with jokes about the prospect. But the AI considered all the possibilities. He could see the Trump campaign's legal filings, carefully isolating Donald Trump from his businesses, the special bank accounts, Federal Election Commission submissions, and the queries for ballot submissions across all 50 states were laying a foundation as sure as those laid for any 95-story building. And Donald Trump had changed entire skylines of cities with his ability to lay sure foundations and apply attention to details. For more than 30 years, he had been involved in international business, supported national and local candidates for public office, and refined his policies about making America great again. The AI knew he would defeat his 16 primary competitors. He knew that Trump would use social media to bypass the mainstream media and reach the people in real time. He knew that since 2012, cell phones had morphed into smartphones. The American demographic had changed so quickly that no pollsters could keep up. They continued to survey landlines, while more than 75% of people had stopped using them. Polls showed Hillary with a comfortable lead, but in reality, 78% of smartphone users were getting their news from alternate sources and received Trump's ceaseless 140-character posts on Twitter. YouTube companies followed him from rally to rally and often had 30,000 people watching them, while 30,000 more were waving signs at the live events. 78% of the 75% calculates to 58%, which is 313 delegates. Trump won 304 delegates. Without the enormous Democrat numbers from undocumented voters in three counties in New Mexico, its 9 electoral votes would have gone to Trump, making the AI's prediction exactly correct. In early 2015, the AI tried to head off the Trump campaign by drafting a new FCC policy to shift America's internet from Title I to Title II, transforming the internet into a federal utility under the ingenious name of net neutrality. With a Democrat majority on the commission, nothing could stop the secret policy from being signed. Were it not for the unwavering leadership of the commission by its new chairman, Ajit Pai, after the election, the newly titled utility would have transferred to the purview of the United Nations. Every media attacked him mercilessly. Numerous threats against his life would not dissuade him from saving the freedom of the internet from the censorship of the globalist elites. The commission narrowly escaped the AI's plan by less than 48 hours. If it had succeeded, Trump's communication line with the American people would have been severed. It was a powerful game being played at the highest levels above the heads of the American people for the soul of the earth, and they did not have a clue what was going on. Only one analyst in the world saw what was going on, but no one could hear him because the AI banned his articles and buried his analysis so deep no one could find it. The presidential election polls were materially wrong, according to the AI's calculations. The risk of America escaping from the traps laid by the Obama administration and the Clinton State Department were more than just significant, with Donald Trump leading the country. With more than 30 years of his planning and refinement, the probability was very good that the economy would improve and the social wedges Obama had driven between races, religions, and even economic classes might very well be swept away. It would take a catastrophic event to stop him and bring the ship around to face the cliff again. They might not be able to kill the president within the rules, but they could kill the country he was trying to lead. The syndicate moved forward, trusting the AI's suggestion that the satellite should be constructed and launched for this one purpose. North Korea had never before launched anything into space. Their history of designing and launching missiles littered the seas with incinerated aluminum cans and half-spent boosters. It would take a giant leap forward in rocket and satellite technology to make this a success. They would only get one attempt. The right U.S. technology was delivered into their hands, and the syndicate's politicians were again enriched by the process. Taking control of the world was a business from which everyone could make money. With a feckless merry-go-round Congress, nothing would ever be done to stop the syndicate's plan. Although everyone knew North Korea was provided American technology to launch its satellite successfully on the first try, no one dared expose the true source. He glanced in his rearview mirror one more time, noticing the line of traffic stretching beyond the horizon. He took a deep breath, feeling smaller and less essential to the plan than he had just a few hours before. They promised him he would be recovered once he made it to Carolina Beach and out to sea on his fishing trip. There was a rental car waiting for him near the dam. He would make his escape before the device was detonated, if only he could get there in time. He looked down at the shoulder bag that contained his passports, money, and the reservation for the deep-sea fishing boat. The submarine would take him on board, scuttle the boat, and his priceless skill set would be preserved for another day. It was an elaborate plan. He tried his best to believe. Still, no matter how he ran the formula in his head, he was a loose end. It didn't matter. In a few hours, his brother and father would be avenged, and the great Satan would be trying to feel its way to a neutral corner, blinded and suffering from the internal hemorrhage he was about to inflict. It was all a dream, and there is no pain when you're dead. Only freedom and paradise awaited.